You also have a DC-4. Now, that's a pretty old aircraft, too. How are parts availabilities for these aircraft?
Luckily, my father's hobby is auction sales. And I spent my entire childhood traveling through the States. Spent most of my time as a kid in hangars, listening to auctioneers. What that does is it gives us the ability to basically mass buy everything. There's trailers and trailers of parts that we haven't even looked at yet. It's almost like going and getting a goodie bag at a birthday party. You open it up and like, oh, there it is. Perfect.
Well, some parts are not going to age well, like tires.
Yeah, tires. Luckily, like events like Oshkosh here bring together a lot of people, and you get to meet people that need tires. So if there's 40 DC-3s here, hey, we need some tires. We all get together, call up the Michelin man and say, hey, we need some tires. So there is the camaraderie that Oshkosh brings that help with parts.
So that's a side benefit that I would have never even thought of, that you actually got enough buying power to interest a manufacturer in remanufacturing these older parts.
For sure. And the DC-3, even though it's turning 75 this year, still has a lot of fans out there. And Transport Canada, manufacturers, and everybody, as of right now, still hold the airplane, a little piece of their heart towards it. So that does help.
Well, I was talking to your father last night, and I said I would classify as one of those prop heads. Yeah. I'm not sure he likes prop heads, but, but if I could get up there and get a ride on one, I would.
Well, you know, you're here at a place, Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Now, Basler is just across the street. They make the BT-67 conversion of the DC-3. Have you guys ever thought about picking one of those up?
Yeah, for sure. And Basler makes an extraordinary airplane. That airplane is the definition of plane porn. It is absolutely everything that you would ever want. But the economic situation that we're in, it's a lot easier to use the airplanes that we have because they were paid for in 1970. The bank's not going to call us and say we need a loan.
Spoken like a true CEO.
True, but there are limits to how far you can go with that.
Yeah, for
sure. I would tend to think that some of the problems that you may already be experiencing is engines, possibly landing gear, and other parts of the aircraft that you know are going to wear out. Mm-hmm. Sooner or later, you're either going to have to start manufacturing them, upgrading the aircraft you have, or switching to other aircraft.
Well, for sure. Actually, Basler buys our landing gear parts off of us. Anyway, besides that, we're okay. If someone came new on the market, Joe Sixpack out there says, I want to operate DC-3s in Northern Canada. In 1970, when we started, it was very possible. There was lots out there. But now, it would be virtually impossible because the parts, if you don't buy them in mass quantities, they're really expensive because there's the warbird market out there right now. So they're willing to pay, you know, $6,000 for a starter, where if we blow 3 starters a day, we're broke. So we got to go buy a trailer load of starters, pick through them, fix them ourselves, send them out for overhaul, and that's what we have to do. And that's just the experience in a long time that we've been doing it. That going back to that, the Basler is being very successful in Canada right now for surveying. It's very successful in Antarctica, where you don't have it's kind of like us, but a new company can come in and operate the vintage airplane and have a support with the company. You can call Basler and they give you a part. We can't call Douglas because the phone just rings busy.
You've tried, haven't you?
if it's even up at all.
Yeah.
But it's got to really be an extraordinary experience to actually be a pilot up there. I mean,
yeah. What does it take to be a pilot up there?
Well, I feel a little bit fortunate. I'm not a pilot. I'm the farthest thing away from a pilot. But I have been raised by rampies. My family being so busy with the business, it was part, like, not only do you have to put the plane away, you got to take care of little Mikey. So I was raised completely immersed in the thing, and you can't predict. You cannot predict who's going to be good. Personalities don't really matter. You know, it's not a cookie cutter pilot coming out of flight school, you know, that is, you know, he's watched Top Gun 15 times that week. You can't really judge him on it because he could be the rock star. Or, and same with the tumbleweed kid that rolls in from a farm in Saskatchewan. You would think that that kid would have the advantage, but sometimes he's the worst one. So you really have a mixed bag.
And so you got to try them all and see which ones float to the top.
Yeah, for sure. Like my mom, she'd be like, oh, yeah, this thing I won't last. And, you know, in 15 years later, he's the chief pilot. So, like, you cannot predict, which makes it fun. And it really opens up your eyes to not judging people, because it's everybody's equal when you start, and you basically decide yourself if you don't want to be there.
And the ground support crew that you have, it has to be incredible. They've got to not only tolerate the cold, but they've got to handle everything coming in and off the airplane without mangling the baggage. And not only that, but they have to be concerned with the cold as well. That's mm-hmm. the additional handicap. It's got to be a tremendous challenge to everybody involved.
We've all laid underneath cars on snowy nights, mm-hmm. but nothing like what you guys call an average day at the office.
And there is a reason why there's only 40,000 people in the whole territory where I'm from, and there's, 500,000 people here. It's not for everybody. And shows like Ice Pilots, I think, are beneficial, because you could live the life, you can watch it, but necessarily you can, open your door and still go to the beach where we're stuck there. Even though the cameras stop,
it's still cold.
Yeah. There's still got to be a lot of stuff going on out of range of the camera lens as well. What was it like shooting the TV show?
I got to give my hats off to these camera guys, because if you think it's extreme what you see on TV, you got to think about the guy's job that he's invisible. His job is to make himself invisible. So not only are you getting the benefit of seeing everything, there's a guy that's behind the camera that's doing everything that these pilots and these mechanics are doing.
So he's exposed to the same cold.
Yeah. He's not in green trailer, with a remote control doing stuff. He's out there. These cameras are so delicate that you can't wear big mitts. So if the mechanics are out there bare hands changing a cylinder, the camera guys are out there with their bare hands. And if
he's along for the ride and you have to make an off-airport landing, Well, guess what? He's stuck there, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And they sleep in the plane. And it's not. And the cool thing is a lot of them don't make it, too. Just like the rampies and the pilots, cameramen come and go, and the good ones stay. And you're left with the cream of the crop and technically the crazy ones.
Yeah.
That works.
Nice.
I was going to say, you're along the same vein of Ice Road Truckers, Deadliest Catch, Mike Rowe with Dirty Jobs.
Well, you could consider them frontiersmen.
Yeah, really. This is another thing that a lot of people take for granted. The Northwest Territory. Do they fly airplanes? Yes, they do. Here's how they do it. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful exposure.
Do you get a sentiment from new pilots coming back on their first few hops that, wow, this is a really big place, and that's a small airplane once you get up in the air?
Yeah, there is a lot of people that literally last hours. We don't even get their name a lot of times. And my brother's got a thing, I won't even learn your name until you're here 6 months. It's a testament to the people that stay. So if you stay in Canada, literally it would be hard to get on an airliner now that someone hasn't been through Buffalo or touch Buffalo, especially the high-end stuff. We got 747 cabins for Qantas. At one time, one of the major airlines in Canada's WestJet, we had 18 Buffalo guys there. All the Basler guys that go to the Antarctic, virtually all of them are the chief pilots and all that. They're all Buffalo guys. Basically, if you on your resume, if it says Buffalo, there's a good chance that one of the hiring guys is a Buffalo guy too. So it's almost like a secret fraternity, like the I hear in the States
ring
that's
within
popular.
The ring.
You have a secret handshake too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, a secret handshake.
And it's really good, because if your resume says, I flew King Airs in Ontario and all this stuff, but if you say I flew DC-4s in the Arctic, they go, okay. So, and that motivates a certain part of the group, that people that stay is just that they're getting the experience that can propel their career. And
well, they're getting a lot of experience you're just not going to get anywhere else.